SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races, and having heard the Belmont Stakes information, the dulcet tones of John Imbrial, it made me remember. I want to slip this in. Thursday, that's tomorrow, right? Yeah, tomorrow. The tickets will go on sale for. The stretch, the end of the grandstand, the renovated end of the grandstand at Saratoga. Tickets go on sale tomorrow online. And for those of you that enjoyed it, and obviously people did last summer, make a mental note. Tomorrow's your day if you've already started a plan for Saratoga. All right. And I don't know if Sid's been planning yet for Saratoga, but he'll be up around the sale. And right now he's enjoying the Bethune-Cookman college action. And I have been watching with interest, Sid. Joe is racking up game-winning hits on a daily basis.
Baseball is ups and downs just like life, so... We ride the highs right now, but don't get too low down the road. But, you know, you live in the present, so it's just a day-to-day thing. And thank you. It's been you've been put on a show, for sure.
It's neat. And I did enjoy. I know that they got beat, but that when he had that home run, I guess what, they were being shut out, and he homered.
Yeah.
And, the way he made his way, he was observing it a little bit.
that was funny because behind the scenes, what happened? They were getting shut out badly. But I think it was like a 9-0 lead, and the catcher was, you know, talking trash to him the whole time while he was up at the plate. So then he hits the home run, and of course, you know, takes his time going around the bases. Of course, everybody there knew the next time up he was going to get plunked. And
yeah.
He did.
I love it. Well, as I told you the other day, it's great that you get to do this, and you know, you can spend the time, and it doesn't take away from your day job either. Well,
you know, the funny thing is you run into horse people at these games, Steve. I'm at the game against Boston College. Bethune-Cookman had a series at home against Boston College, and I'm sitting with Rocky Baldelli. That's Rocco Baldelli's father. Rocco, of course, a horseman as well. You know, had several horses, did quite well. He's now the first year manager of the Twins. But anyway, his dad and I are sitting there. This guy comes up, and Rocky introduces me to him, John Kosiak. And I say hi, you know, and he starts talking to Rocky. Walks away. Later, Rocky walks away. I'm still sitting there, and John Kosiak comes back up to me. And John Kosiak, by the way, is a very high-level scout. He's the Northeast supervisor for the Mets. So he comes up to me, and he says, your son is Joe, you know, Rocky had said, this is Sid, his son is Joe Fernando, the shortstop. He says, your son is Joe Fernando, who went to Deerfield Academy? I said, yeah. So he said, so you're Sid Fernando? And I said, yeah. He said, I've been listening to you for 10 years on Steve Bick on your show.
I love it.
As it turns out, John Kosiak has a stable. He runs at Saratoga. It's called Transfiguration Stable. And I told him I'd shout out that he said, you know, it's a claiming stable, but his claim to fame, he said, is I did have a sale topper, and I said, who's that? He said he signed George Springer, you know, the star of the Astros. So,
sure.
yeah, shout out to John and Transfiguration Stable.
Oh, that's tremendous. I love it. I love it. That's like when Johnny D has been stopped in elevators twice. The people heard his voice and said, "Are you Johnny D?" Yes, I listen to you. Because Johnny's got that distinctive voice. I love
it. Funny because Johnny D actually sent me a text after the plunk of Joe, and he said, "I'm glad to see that the college baseball game is still pure."
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. It's fun. So for those of you that that follow Sid, you can be sure to click on the live action video that Sid provides of the games. It's fun. We're all rooting along vicariously here with the season.
Thank you.
How are they? I mean, how is Bethune overall?
Well, yeah. Thanks for asking. You know, they've had this third coach in 3 years. The last coach, this guy's pretty good. The first guy was great. He's the guy who recruited Joe, but then he left. They had a stacked team that did terribly under the other manager last year, but they took their time firing him, so a lot of guys left, Steve. They transferred. And by the time this guy came in, he's got a really thin staff. I mean, there are only 26 players on the team, and college teams carry 35. Ooh. They lost a bunch of pitchers. So it's an adventure this year. You know, they don't have much depth on the bench or pitching, but they're a fun group of guys to watch. And so anything they do right now, they're overachieving. And the fact that they beat the ACC team, Boston College, by the way, where Rocco, the reason Rocky Baldelli was there is Rocco's brother, baby brother, Dante Baldelli, plays on that team. So the fact that we won a series against an ACC team, pretty damn good. Hopefully they fight and they try to get into the playoffs and the regionals like they did 2 years ago. They lost the championship game in the ACC regional to the Gators, Walker Hancock's team. Walker's a Gator grad, and then the Gators went on to win the College World Series. This team, you know, like I said, it's overachieving, but it's like in racing, Steve. You get one of these horses that doesn't have a big pedigree, and he does something. He comes from nowhere, and you know, there's a big rooting interest in it. In that respect, it's going to be fun and interesting.
Nice. For whatever reason, collegiate baseball doesn't get the same, the same attention and focus that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little weird, actually. Considering how many. You know, transition right into the majors and the draft system and everything else. You would think that it would be it would have a certain appeal. And the College World Series it has a great tradition itself. Actually, they still play Rosenblatt. Is Omaha still a thing?
They're still in Omaha, but I think they moved the stadium. It might be right. I forget, but I know the old Rosenblatt Stadium has been changed.
Oh.
It's a newer stadium, but it's in Omaha.
Well, Omaha's a fun town. When I lived in Kansas City, we'd get up to Omaha. I got to Exarban one time, good experience.
Nice. It used to be some great, fun racing at Exarban.
Well,
which is Nebraska spelled backwards.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there was also the Dakota track, right?
Then there's Fonner Park. Fonner Park, right?
Yeah, but the Dakota, they spell it. They had a. It was Dakota Attica, spelled backwards.
Attica, yeah.
Attica right. Downs, yeah. That's right. Yeah, I've got a nice collection of the Exarban. Exarban for years gave out pins, annual pins that I assume were for owners and whatever. And admission to the clubhouse or whatever they are. I've got like 25 of the Exarban pins. You see them on eBay, and
Oh wow, nice! That's a nice collector's item, huh?
They're really pretty. I mean, they're interesting too. I mean, sometimes they have an Indian, they'll have an Indian motif. There's some that are almost like an arrowhead, and
right.
all different. Every year it was different. If you've never seen them, they're kind of cool. And I know that Exarban has lamented that it's at one time the seventh largest track in handle in this country. I mean, it
amazing.
It was, yeah. It was not, yeah. you know, it was not some sideshow.
Oh no, it was always part of my vocabulary growing up. You know, we always used to like follow horses from there. Remember who Doctor Who from Exarban?
Sure.
He was a big star over there, and East Coast horses would go out there to run. You know, it was legit.
Big
the
time.
Nebraska,
of course,
the Omaha Gold Cup was a big race.
You bet, and the litany of horsemen that came out, obviously.
Yeah, Ben Glass came out of there.
There you go. All right, I hadn't thought of that, but that makes sense, absolutely.
Yeah. And Gary and Mary West, of course, the owners. That's where they were racing.
Well, and you know, the Van Berg legacy.
Of course.
And
yeah.
Bill Mott. I mean, it's not as if it's you know, disconnected from modern. From you know, from the modern era,
right?
You know,
right.
At all. So there we go. Well, let's transition into the modern era and what has gone on in the couple of weeks that we haven't been around with you, Sid. And there's a few things. I was on hand for War of Will, and I know you want to get into him a little bit. From a physical standpoint, just a horse that takes your breath away.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah, I haven't seen him, but a big colt, right?
Big in a
athletic
healthy
way.
Yes,
yeah.
In a bruising. He's just big in all the right places. He's strapping, but he's not. You know, he's not too tall. He's not too long. He's just.
Right.
I mean, he's just he's got a kind of a linebacker look to him. And the way he paraded around that paddock, with his neck bowed.
That's
intimidating.
That's a great intro because that linebacker look is the look of Northern dancers, you know. Of course, he was a small but powerful linebacker. And first off, you know, in discussing this thing, he's by Warfront, who's, you know, obviously established a tremendous reputation as an outstanding sire of turf horses, and in Europe, a sire of 2-year-olds, turf sprinters, turf milers, with the occasional 10-furlong horse like Declaration of War in Europe as well. But it's interesting because Francis Caron, and I want to give a shout-out to Francis because Work Therapy Consultants has hired her as our bloodstock editor for our blog, and we're kind of rehabbing our blog, and she had her first blog post on War of Will, and what she said in that was really, it just kind of hit home, because with all the surprise about War of Will running on dirt so well, she pointed out that A, Northern Dancer is, of course, the sire of Danzig, is the sire of Warfront, the sire of War of Will. Northern Dancer, of course, is a Derby and Preakness winner, right? Danzig wasn't a stakes winner, but all three of his starts were in dirt. Warfront only raced on dirt. And, you know, these are all dirt performers, but as she put it, circumstantially, in Northern Dancer's second crop, he got Nijinsky, the last British Triple Crown winner. That changed the entire the complexion of his stud career, because at that point, after that, the Robert Sangster and the Coolmore gang came and purchased all the top Northern dancers at auction to race in Europe, basically. Sadler's Wells, El Gran Señor, Secreto for trained by Vincent O'Brien's son, David O'Brien, Epsom Derby winner. So that transition made Northern Dancer one of the greatest sires of European classic winners at the time. But keep in mind at that time, as she pointed out, Northern Dancer didn't really get the opportunity with all these great colts going to Europe to have that same impact in the United States. But he did get, of course, Ferdinand, who won the Kentucky Derby. He did get his own son, Nijinsky, who stood here, did get Ferdinand, who won the Kentucky Derby. Nijinsky, who was at stud at Claiborne, just like Danzig and Warfront, the same thing happened to him, Steve. His progeny was sent to Europe, basically, over time, and the same circumstantial attitude of turf. Then you had Danzig. Danzig stood at stud here. His first crop, by the way, he didn't have a single turf graded stakes winner, as Francis pointed out. But because he got such high-class horses on dirt, like Chief's Crown and others, the Coolmore guys and Europeans flocked to him. And so then the Danzig started going to Europe as well. But Danzig did get quite a few horses here on dirt, high-class horses. And colts and fillies. And so when Warfront came to stud, and after getting from his first crop horses like the Factor and Sold That, and then from his third crop, that good Claiborne gelding, I forget his name right now, won over 800,000. Again, he showed early signs of dirt. But then, once again, they started going to Europe, and so he established this turf reputation. But the dirt ability was always there, and War of Will is an example of that. But last year I was talking to Bernie Sams and Walker Hancock of Claiborne at Saratoga, actually. It was when I was doing my column on Blaine, and so I didn't include this in the piece, but Bernie was kind of indignant when I said, you know, what a great turf stallion Warfront is. He said, listen, this horse can get dirt horses. Same thing, Walker, they were both adamant about it. In fact, they said they've been breeding a lot of top dirt mares to him in recent books just to prove that, but even before that's happened, now War of Will has arrived on the scene, and he's out of a big turf family, yet he's performing in dirt.
Sid, in I don't know if it's, I want to say anecdotal or just in, I guess in practice, I mean just in practicality, what from a breeding advisory role, what do you see in a horse like this that would indicate a preference from one surface or another, and how how readily do you deal with questions like this from clients about what kind of a horse they can expect to have when they hit the ground?
Yeah, that's that's a good point, because when you have a horse like Warfront, for example, and you're at this stage of his career where he's put up all these huge numbers on turf, the inclination is, of course, that's where his forte is. And so people, even the connections, as Francis pointed this out too, but even they purchased this horse in Europe at a two-year-old sale, brought him back to the States, and started him out on turf just because of that whole aura of Warfront turf, and plus the Sadler's Wells and this big turf female family. And he ran quite well on turf. In fact, he was beaten in the nose by that other Warfront, Peter Brandt's Warfront, in the Canadian G1. And just by chance, they put him on dirt, and, you know, he performed. And I think, in general, Steve, to answer your, getting back to your question, you know, you breed to a horse, say, like Kitten's Joy, and like Warfront, you know, the inclination is you want to go to turf with those horses. But the big picture is, and this is something you and I have discussed on this show, the history of this game has been, in this country, has been about imported horses. And those imported horses from Europe were turf horses. You take Claiborne's Nazarula, for example, came here, and, of course, everything that he produced, because that's what most of the racing was here, was on dirt, and they ran on dirt. Got Bold Ruler, who got Secretary. You know, it goes down the road. You've got Rebo came here to Darby Dan, as well as Seabird. Earlier on, you had horses like Mahmoud, Blenheim. You know, the whole history of the game has been about these turf horses coming here. The reality is, if you're a good stallion, you're going to adapt to your new surroundings, and a lot of these horses do adapt, and they actually add a lot to the breed. They add stamina, they add diversity. In fact, a point I brought up, that was brought up to me by Rocco Baldelli, we just happened to mention him, but he read the article, he read my column recently in the TDN about sires by non-elite sires, and pointed out that type of diversity helps to strengthen the breed. He's absolutely right. Some of these horses that come to this country and become leading sires are by either offshoots of well-known sire lines or kind of obscure sire lines, and they make an impact. I mentioned Lord at War, who was by a little-known sire called General, who himself was by Brigadier Girard, who was by Queen Chausson. It's a very obscure line for us here, and yet he made an impression here and became the Broodmare Sire of War emblem. And the Broodmare Sire, more importantly, a pioneer of the Nile, the sire of American Pharaoh. You know, you look at Unbridled, Derby winner, but his Broodmare Sire is Le Fabuleux, a French Derby winner who stood at Claiborne. Again, that introduction of that line, Le Fabuleux line, the line of Wild Risk, it's a French line that's not well known here, but it added to and complemented and strengthened the lines here. The same thing with Unbridled Song, Unbridled Sun, Unbridled Song, out of a Cairo mare. And Cairo was an import in the late 70s to Spencer Farm. Again, by a very obscure line, by Fortino, a stallion who'd been sent to Japan after being a failure in Europe. And it's a line that went back to Nasrula, but very obscurely. So these are all elements that these turf elements, I think sometimes they're overblown, because I think these horses can run on any surface. You know, when we get back to War of Will, you know, it's a perfect example of that.
I want you to also riff, Sid, on a fascinating feature of this pedigree, and I don't know, nothing comes to mind in bringing up the mare La Lune, and she got the siblings for Harry Guggenheim, Bold Reason and Never Bend. The dam of War of Will is bred so fascinatingly. There's a bunch of blue hen mares in here, including Special, who, of course, got Ferry Bridge, who got Sadler's Wells. But Special herself was also the dam of Nureyev, right?
Exactly.
You've got Aviance in here as well. I mean, this horse is bred so exquisitely, and it almost it almost reeks of kind of a class, Sid, a throwback class that just says a horse this nice will run on anything, and is just so good. And it's one of the reasons I think people are really, I don't know why people are discounting him, but talk about having the inbreeding of two half brothers in Bold Reason and Never Bend fairly up close. Visions of Clarity, 3x3, well, really 4x4 to Laloon, but 3x3 to the half brothers.
Yeah, that's a really good point. As you know, as you mentioned, Kane Hoy stable of Captain Guggenheim produced the mare Laloon, produced Never Bend. She also produced Never Bend's half brother, Bold Reason. Never Bend, by the way, was one of the best 2 year olds that Woody Stevens ever had. He's always said that, and he said when he got Danzig, he told people that Danzig was as close to Never Bend, you know, as he'd seen. Never Bend was a very, very high class horse. Never Bend, of course, was by Nash Rula. Became an excellent stallion at Claiborne, and ended up also siring one of the great European horses in Mill Reef for Paul Mellon, who came around the time of Nijinsky. Mr. Mellon, of course, left Mill Reef at stud in the U.S. Bold Reason, Never Bend's half brother, is the broodmare sire of Sadler's Wells. So what ended up turning into a great nick, and this turns into what you're talking about, having these two half-sisters on both sides of the pedigree, one of the great nicks in Europe was Sadler's Wells with Mill Reef. And so through Darshan, Shirley Heights, and whatnot, so what you ended up, his son's in that line, so what you ended up having, Steve, is this exact same construct of Sadler's Wells with Bold Reason on the top of the pedigree, and you would then get Never Bend on the bottom side of the pedigree through the Mill Reef. And it became a great nick in Europe. Flaxman Holdings bred Visions of Clarity, the dam of War of Will, as they bred War of Will as well. And so this particular cross, Sadler's Wells with the Riverman, again, another son of Never Bend, it's the same type of concept of what was you know, a terrific nick of Sadler's Wells with Never Bend. And that, of course, includes on the top half with Sadler's Wells, Bold Reason. On the bottom side, Never Bend being Bold Reason's half brother.
And you know, and while we focused on the Danzig and the Sadler's Wells, you know, you also on the tail female line, you've also got Northfields, who got Avion. So Northern Dancer back there in the five hole as well.
Yeah, there's several crosses to Northern Dancer in his pedigree, exactly.
Now, there's so many. There's so much here, and of course the Niarchos family, you know, gets involved, you know, post Guggenheim, and you just have layer upon layer. And you know, it's funny, Sid, because this is really our first 3-year-old conversation in earnest of the year, and it's one of those themes that we seem to hit on a regular basis in these visits as we lead up to the classics, is the presence in these pages of, you know, the hallmarks, you know, the matriarchs and the patriarchs and, you know, and the, you know, the breeders that, you know, dot the stud book, that just have made, you know, the biggest impact.
Absolutely. And this colt has, you know, one of the top pedigrees, the top, as we've just discussed, that you're going to find for a potential classic colt. He's also bred to stay this trip. Distance is not going to be a issue for this colt, based on his pedigree. The other part of this is, of course, this is the female, tail female line of Best in Show, which is one of the greatest families in the stud book internationally. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of class, there's a lot of black type, international renown, and the staying ability. So if I were to rank this colt, you know, he's right up there. That's one of the reasons I really wanted to speak about him, because we all know what he's been doing on the track, but guess what? His pedigree is even better.
Now, looking forward to the Louisiana Derby and where things go from here. Let's also, Sid, away from War of Will, I wanted to just kind of note, watching the maiden and allowance ranks and the return, we're certainly focused on that big group that comes back on Friday at Santa Anita with Desmond and Roadster and Nolo Contesta. But Mucho comes back, and you know, you're touching on the Claiborne team. Well, Blame, being a son of Blame, that's fine. But I noted, I guess it was, it must have been after, it must have been when I was, I guess I was I in Vegas? I don't even remember. But there was the two stake performers for Blame. Blamed won down at Gulfstream, won the Royal Delta. And you also had Marley's Freedom come back and get her season started. She's going to try to stretch out and do some distaffing. But Marley's Freedom won that Santa Monica against a good group. And then it just so happens that today in the TDN, they've got the sixth crop list, and there's Blame. And I'm reminded of the old chestnut from John Nayrud. An old chestnut himself, John, you know, John Haskin has said that John used to say, you don't judge a stallion until they've had seven crops, and it feels like Blame I'm not going to say rounding into form, because he's been okay, you know, from fairly early on, but it does feel like Blame is in a nice beat right now, and I suppose that comes in part from breeders understanding what kind of mares to bring to him at this point. You know, talk about a stallion that is approaching the middle part of his career.
Well, in Blaine's case, of course, went to stud with a lot of acclaim to him at Claiborne Farm. There's a lot to blame to like. First off, he's a Roberto line horse by their horse Arch, who was the son of Chris S. by Roberto, and it's a great line. Again, Roberto, an Epsom Derby winner for Derby Dan, brought the stud here, a grass horse, and we're talking a line of dirt horses. But even with Blaine, for example, Blaine is a horse that, you know, I've always been a fan of this horse because this horse, from one of his first few crops, bred the Prix de Diane winner, Senga. That's the Prix de Diane is the French Oaks which is a tremendous rate. And he was one of the first U.S. stallions in a long time to get a European Classic winner. And, by the way, incidentally, Senga was a Flaxman bred, just as War of Will is. There's other similarities, too. When you look at Blaine's pedigree, you were talking about Sadler as well as Nureyev. He's from the exact family. His third dam is special. So you have this stallion from the same family of Sadler's Wells and Nureyev. He's by Arch out of the Seeking the Gold Mare. He had the license, even though he was a dirt horse, to sire a filly like Senga on turf. Which gets back to my earlier point that these types of stallions can sire dirt and turf horses. They can sire, and in Blaine's case, by the way, he's showing that he's siring horses not only on various distances, surfaces, but across the range of distances, from sprinters to stairs, milers to mucho, a potential classic horse. He was a horse that, for some reason, and Bernie and Walker, I did a big column on Blaine last year at Saratoga. That's when we had this big conversation off topic on Warfront, but on topic on Blame at the time. As Bernie said, Chef Hancock had come up to him at the beginning of last year and said, "What are we going to have to do to get get 100 mares to Blame?" And Bernie said to Seth, "Got to drop the fee down to 12.5, drop it all the way down." And Seth said, "Go ahead and do it." Bernie dropped the fee to 12.5, and what a bargain that was for breeders last year, because little did they know that Blaine was on his way last year to a career year, which he's now carrying into this year. But last year was a watershed year for Blaine. He took off, and meanwhile he's standing for 12.5. Now he's back up to 30. He's being patronized again by top breeders, and as he should, because he's shown that he's a legitimate stallion, an important stallion, and I think you got to look for a lot to come down the road too, because you have those crops where before the 12.5 last year that are still going to be running. It's called Mucho, his son, who's a highly promising colt. Check out his pedigree, because I just told you that Blaine's second dam Bound is the daughter of Special, right? Now, Special, as you pointed out, is the dam of Nureyev and the second dam of Sadler as well. Well, Mucho's third dam is Bound. So what you have in Mucho is an interesting pedigree where he's inbred 3x3 to Bound. Bound is by Nijinsky out of Special, so you have that entire Mucho essentially is from the same family as Blaine. So you'd call this a 3x3 inbreeding to Bound, and a very interesting pedigree, and it'll make him a very interesting stallion prospect. She'd go on and win some grade one races and then eventually go to stud at Claiborne. Of course, Claiborne is the co-breeder with Adele Wilschneider. Special, by the way, I just want to mention this about Special. Special was a horse, when Seth Hancock took over at Claiborne after the death of his father, and he's doing some house cleaning. Well, there's this filly, Special, beautifully bred filly. But unfortunately, she can't run. Why? She's a terrible bleeder. Cannot run. Never raced. But Seth decides she's shown talent in the mornings in her workouts. We're going to keep her, and we're going to breed from her. And so he's always maintained that it's not the individual, it's the family that shows, right? And his family, what does he do? He breeds Nureyev. Who buys Nureyev? Stavros Niarchos of Flaxman Holdings. There's that relationship again with Flaxman Claiborne, right?
Amazing. And to some degree, you look at Blame and you see a lot of the same kind of themes that we just talked about with Warfront and War of Will, where you've got Arch being a son of Chris S, son of Roberto, and there's Hail to Reason, and so you got plenty of turf there. You come down on the female side, and Bound was by Nijinsky, as you said, and here's Forley who shows up in both pages, and Special as mentioned. I mean it's pretty funny. I mean, and I kind of randomly went to you with Blame this morning, because I saw that he had the two, his two big female runners. I suppose it would be very valuable to him, Sid, at this point, to get, a big son. Would be timely with the...
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, and I think Mucho is just, Mucho, when I was talking to Bernie and Walker last year, I think that, for them, there's a lot of hope in that horse, that he does end up becoming... a Claiborne Stallion, a successor to Blame. That would be, the second horse in the same sire line they've stood. They stood Blame, and actually be the third. They stand Blame, and they stood Arch. And plus the way this pedigree is, again, he's from the family of Mucho himself. Now he's from the family of Sadler as well as the Nureyev.
I'm looking, Sid, and his current top performers, and it is absolutely female laden. Marley's Freedom, Blamed, Ms. Bad Behavior, Splashy Kisses, the 3-year-old that's multiple stakes placed, Randani, that is in Japan, she's a 4-year-old filly. Fault, that Ian Wilkes has had success with. Beyond Blame, 4-year-old grade 3 winner. Miss Kentucky, River Gal, on and on. There's only one male on the list, Maraud, the American Turf winner for Todd Pletcher. That's the only male. So you really get the sense that his long-term prospects are as a broodmare sire.
Right. He also had, he's had, as you pointed out, predominantly female, but he's had 3 graded stakes winning colts. Far From Over, I believe, was from his first crop. Then he had March as well, along with Maraud. So you had Far From Over, you had Maraud, and you had March. But the others are female from the graded stakes winners. In other words, he did 11 or 12 graded winners, and predominantly female, except for the ones we just mentioned.
Now, and keeping an eye on the broodmare side, so far he's got 30 dams of 13 named foals. So maybe in the back of your mind, for those of you that like to use pedigree angles when wagering, keep file that one away for future reference.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got broodmare sire marked all over.
Well, as always, these are always interesting. We never know, what direction we're going to end up, Sid, but it's always fruitful, and as always, we appreciate it, and, we should mention, because we skipped through the middle 2 weeks of the month, all the stallion barns are open, and mares are being covered. We're underway for the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do things change, and what can we tell, prospective clients for Work Thoroughbred consultants in terms of people, kind of bobbing and weaving, once they once they've delivered their current foal, or, you know, those that are going to have decisions to make in March and April about existing mares that are out there, fillies and mares that you might be campaigning, and, you know, should people, you know, how aware should they be that, you know, they should be in touch and they should be watching out
sure.
for
they
the,
can,
you know.
They can definitely contact us at any point, you know. Most people have made their mating plans by this point, but you're right. There's always the filly or mare that gets retired, or some people at the smaller sub three ranges still haven't made up their minds. You know, and the thing that starts to happen, Steve, in the industry is that when you start to book horses during the breeding season, you're going to get a discount more often than not for the stud fee, because at that point, you know, they're later covered, and so there's all sorts of you know, ways to approach it by booking later in the year, if that's what ends up happening. But yeah, we're certainly available, and you know, they can always contact our office, and I appreciate you mentioning that.
Not at all. 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. And Sid, always great. And we'll probably have Hidden Scroll is going to be the short-priced favorite, it would seem, going into the Fountain of Youth. But we'll see how things shake out on that field on Saturday.
Absolutely. And yeah, we'll discuss
we'll
next week.
There.
Yeah, great. And great
exactly.
talking to you, Steve.
Always fun. Sid Fernando, folks. And you follow Sid on Twitter, Sid Fernando, quite simply. And Sire Watch. You should be following Sire Watch as well. And Hill and Dale Farm, of course. Sire Watch Better Refocus. Brought to you by Hill and Dale. Coming up toward the top of the hour. And we'll step away, come back. We got Seth Merrow to visit in a little bit, plus more. Stay with us.
The latest thoroughbred racing news. Dial 866-454-6848 to get on board. The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.